Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Music Woman Live with your host, Dr. Diva JC, supported by Women in Jazz South Florida, www.wijsf.org.
Well, good afternoon. This is Dr. Diva JC, and I have a very special guest today. We're not playing any music, so those of you that are familiar with the music of trumpeter Lee Morgan, after this show, go listen to Sidewinder if you want to hear some good music. In the meantime, my guest is Larry Rennie Thomas from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. And Larry is a well-known journalist and author. And he penned the book, The Lady Who Shot Lee Morgan. So we're going to be talking about that book and the subsequent movie I called him. Lynn Morgan was the wife of Lee Morgan, and they had a shaky relationship from the beginning because of Morgan's addiction to drugs. And, of course, the difficulties of being a musician and the wife of a musician. So I'm going to bring Larry Rennie Thomas in and let him tell us the story. Hi, Larry.
Greetings from the land of John Coltrane, Thelonious Monk, Max Roach, and Nina Simone.
Okay.
All North Carolina. Yeah.
That's right.
Heavyweights.
Well, you have the stories, I'm sure, but tonight I'd like to focus on the story of Lee Morgan. I do have one question
Okay. Before
we begin. Were Helen and Lee legally married, or were they a common law couple?
No, there was a common law marriage. I've gotten some emails from some of his relatives in reference to the article that I wrote and the book that I wrote. They seem to be disenchanted about it, and they would. I think they're disenchanted mostly because they don't get any royalties. Lee married a Japanese American lady in Chicago, and she's the one who gets the royalties from his recordings.
Okay. Well, it's funny how people want to get royalties from somebody's cultural and intellectual production, and they don't even know the person, you know.
That's interesting. Yeah, I thought so too. But yeah, she's the one who gets his royalties. He was legally married to her, and they never divorced. Her name is Kiko.
Kiko.
And she's still living. She lives in Chicago.
Mm-hmm. So, Larry, first of all, tell us a little bit about your background as a journalist and specifically as a jazz radio host.
Well, I started when I was in grad school here in Chapel Hill. This is where the University of North Carolina is located. And I started as a way to relieve some stress. I came down with an ulcer when I was writing my thesis. So as a way of relieving some stress, I decided I would do a radio program, and when I started my program, I would do, I don't call it jazz, I call it American classical music. I did a four-hour show I did from 12 to 2, I did American classical music, jazz, and for 2 other hours I did some Caribbean music. And so after that, I got a job at a station getting paid doing jazz. So I've been at it since 1978. I worked at about maybe 7 or 8 different public radio stations, and the only thing I ever done was been a jazz radio announcer. I was working at a station down in Wilmington, my hometown on the coast, and that's where I met Helen Morgan. I was doing a 5-nighter, 6-nighter really, hosting a program that came on from 10 p.m. until 1 a.m., Evening Jazz it was called, and as a way of introducing myself to the class, I mentioned the fact that I was teaching her. She was one of my students. And when I told her that I was a jazz radio announcer, she said, "Oh, I love jazz. My husband was a jazz musician, and her last name was Morgan." And she told me right away. I said, "Well, what was your husband's name?" And she said, "Lee." And that's how I met Mrs. Morgan. That was around 1990.
Okay, and what about your writing for the New York Times and Downbeat magazine?
Yeah, I wrote a piece. Basically, I've been doing stuff here in North Carolina. I wrote a piece for Downbeat and involved Woody Shaw. Woody Shaw is a native. I do lectures called the Carolina Jazz Connection. I found that there's over 75 jazz musicians who were born here in North Carolina. One of them was Woody Shaw. And Woody Shaw came down here to do a benefit. They were trying to start a Dizzy Gillespie Jazz Hall of Fame in the town where Woody was born. He was born in Lomberg. Of course, he grew up in Newark because his family moved here early. But that's how I got a piece. I wrote a piece on that benefit concert. And Dizzy Gillespie attended school in Lomberg at Lomberg Institute. So they were trying to start something there called the Jazz Hall of Fame. So I wrote a piece. I've written a couple of pieces for Downbeat. And the New York Times has to do with the other. I've written three books. The New York Times has to do with the piece that I contributed to on the Wilmington 10, who were political prisoners during the 70s. So that's how I got in the New York Times magazine.
Okay, so now go ahead and just tell us about your relationship with Helen Morgan, how the book came about, and how it became the movie I call Morgan, that is being featured on Netflix.
Yes. Well, like I said earlier, I met Mrs. Morgan when she was a student of mine. I had a couple of jobs when I was down in Wilmington at the radio station, and one of the jobs was teaching Western Civilization a history course because I have an MA in history, a history course at a satellite program that was set up in Wilmington, which is a part of Shaw University. They have satellites all over the state of North Carolina, and one of them was in Wilmington. And she just happened to be a student of mine. She was sitting she always sat up on the front. And she was very quiet most of the time. But I mentioned that I was a jazz radio announcer, and right away she said, "Oh, I love jazz. My husband was a jazz musician." And she said her husband's name was Lee. So I said, "Well, I sure would like to interview you one day." And she said, I'll have to think about it. That was in 1990. And around 1989, 1988, around that time, because it took her about 6 or 7 years before she consented to an interview. So I went over to her house and I interviewed her. I just set the tape recorder in front of her and she just talked. I didn't say much. I just let her talk. And she talked for almost 2 hours, told me all about her life with Lee Morgan. And she even got to the part where she shot him and everything. And that was in February 1996, and in March 1996 she passed. So I wrote an article as a result of the interview and posted it on the internet. And I want to thank you for posting it on your site. You were one of the first to do that. A Swedish filmmaker whose name is Casper Collin, he read it because it went from here to Thailand. I mean, it's been changed into several different languages. And it's been posted on several sites. He contacted me. He wanted to know if he could buy the rights to the interview because I recorded it. So I said, okay. There was another guy in California who wanted to buy the rights, but he wanted to put a Hollywood spin on it. But Casper wanted to do something like a documentary. So I agreed to go with Casper, and once that happened, he actually came over here. And he did some filming here in North Carolina. I think he went out to L.A. He interviewed Wayne Shorter. He did a masterful job of putting it together. So that's how I got in contact with Casper. After he completed what he had to do here, I decided that I was going to write a book on my experience, that entire experience with meeting Mrs. Morgan. I think it's in 5 chapters when I met her and the interview, the article, and the movie, and I also have a concluding chapter, which is called A Cold Night in New York City. It's interesting, it's ironic, because she met Lee Morgan on a cold night in New York City, and she killed him on a very cold, snowy night in New York City. So that's the name of the last chapter of my book. I also have a poem that I wrote called A Cold Night in New York City. So that's what happened. I met Casper, and Casper came here, and he took a movie together. I think it took him about 7 years to do it. But I would have never thought in a million years that the interview that I conducted with Mrs. Morgan would have received so much acclaim. I mean, it's been awesome. I just got back from the Monterey Jazz Festival. They showed it out there, and I did a Q&A with a writer named Ashley Kahn. So I've been kind of busy, to say the least.
Okay. And so, has the movie been shown at any film festivals that you know of?
Oh, yeah. It was shown in September 2016 in Toronto. I went up to Toronto for that. I think that was the first showing here in North America. It's been to the New York Film Festival in New York. It's been to Telluride. It's been the Vancouver Film Festival. It's made the rounds. It's been awesome. Yeah.
Okay, well, you know, I was fortunate enough to see it on Netflix, and
yes.
It was a revisitation for me because, as I told you when we first spoke several years ago, that I was a patron of Slugs from the age of 19 until 21, maybe a little bit longer than that, 22, 23.
Mm-hmm.
And one night I had the opportunity to actually sit in the same booth with Helen Morgan. And
really?
He walked over.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that he spoke to her spoke volumes to me as a young woman. And I remember thinking, and I did tell you this, she's going to kill him one day.
That's not funny to me.
No, I remember.
I remember you telling me that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course you did put it in your book. You know, which our lives are concurrent in that we have met so many jazz artists. Woody Shaw is a musician that you know I rub shoulders with. So anyway, I was in Sausalito 4 years later. And I was at a Transcendental Meditation Center, and Charles Lloyd was there, and he drove me from Sausalito back to San Francisco. We actually met there, and
okay.
He drove me back. He had a milk truck for a vehicle.
Really?
And as soon as we got in the truck, he said, well, did you hear about Lee Morgan? And I said, no, what? And he said, well, Helen shot him. And I was just awestruck because of this feeling that I had sitting in Slug that night.
Yeah.
Slug was a very particular jazz club because it was the location, first of all, it was not in the village. It was what they call the Far East in New York, right under the Williamsburg Bridge. And I was so addicted to being in Slug that I would even drive there on Sunday nights when it was closed and sit outside in my car.
Really?
And it could be on very cold nights, too.
Wow.
I was addicted. Read your poem. Could you read your poem? Do you have it available?
Let me reach over here and I'd like to read it if you'd like. Let me see if I can. I have a copy of my book.
Our announcement. I'll give you 15 seconds to find it. We'll be right back.
Okay.
You're listening to Music Woman Live with your host, Dr. Diva JC, supported by Women in Jazz South Florida. www.wijsf.org.
Yes, so we're back And my guest today is Larry Rennie Thomas, the author of The Lady Who Shot Lee Morgan, which has become an acclaimed film that is shown on Netflix now by the name of I Called Him Morgan. Are you there, Larry?
I'm here, yes. You want me to read the poem? I have it in front of me.
Yes, I do.
Okay. The title is Cold Night in New York City. Cold night in New York City. No one has any pity. When junkies look real silly, walking around willy-nilly, without a coat or two, looking very uncool, sounding like a baby, looking like a maybe. Where's your horn? How can you perform? In the pawn shop? What about your chops? Cold night in New York City. Speedball is aplenty. Taxi ride downtown. Vanguard. Slugs. Gun on the ground. Helen, I know you didn't mean to do it. Lee, why did you make me do it? Shoot you with no pity. Cold night in New York City. That's it.
Well, that's fabulous, and I do hope that I'm one of the few radio hosts that got the opportunity to have you read that.
Well, no, actually, you're the second.
Okay.
I did read it for a lady out in San Francisco when I was trying to promote my visit there, but you're the second, so, you know, you're in the mix.
All right, now tell us a little bit about your lecturing. What do you lecture on?
Well, I lecture on the Carolina Jazz Connection. Basically, I talk about the fact that there are so many jazz musicians who were born in North Carolina. Of course, I just named the big four, Train and Monk and Nina Simone and Max Roach. They were actually born here. Of course, their parents took part in the great migration out of the South. But we're talking about people like Dr. Billy Taylor, who was born in Greenville, North Carolina, Woody Shaw, Lonberg, and this is Percy Heap, the bass player, who was born in my hometown. Percy and Jimmy Heap's father was actually born in my hometown of Wilmington, North Carolina, and they actually attended high school with my parents. You know, so I mean, this is and Duke Ellington's. There's also all kind of connections. Duke Ellington's father was born in North Carolina. Charlie Ross used to play with Thelonious Monk. Both of his parents were born in North Carolina. McCoy Tyner, both of his parents were born in North Carolina. It's just a fascinating subject, and that's got to be my next book. That's the next book, The Carolina Jazz Connection.
And Nina Simone, what is the city that she's from, or town?
She's from Tryon, North Carolina, which is out in the mountains. It's near Asheville. As a matter of fact, they stream the movie out in Asheville. Asheville is the only place that they've screened the movie in North Carolina. We're trying to get it screened in Wilmington. And I went out there to do a book signing and to do a Q&A when they showed it. And someone told me that they are trying to preserve her home out there, the way she was raised, because it's not too far from Asheville. Roberta Flack is from that area. She was born in a place called Black Mountain, which is near Asheville. So, yeah, it's just fascinating. You can go to my blog spot. It's Carolina Jazz Connection with Larry Thomas .blog, and it'll show
okay,
you.
I'm going to link that. So send me that link and put it on this
show.
And this show will be archived by 5 o'clock.
Great.
Now, I do want to tell you that my grandmother left my mother a small piece of land half a mile from downtown Asheville. So I actually got to see him, too. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, wonderful. I enjoyed being there. That was my first time being in Asheville. I've never been there before to spend any amount of time. I think I probably stopped at the airport. But it was a fascinating place. I thought it was quite... The people were very hospitable, and it seemed very warm, and they were very receptive to the film I Called Him Morgan. They were fascinated by that film.
It is an interesting area. Now, I want to ask you another thing. So, you know, we sent each other's books, And in my book, A History of African American Jazz and Blues, I talk about how the music has been appropriated by European Americans. But the part that I would like to discuss with you is Quincy Jones' interview, where he talks about the use of heroin amongst the musicians, and that they almost used it as a ritual, you know. You had to use it to be part of the club, and it also was a stress reliever from the racism that the black male musicians were experiencing. So could you talk about that a little bit?
I can certainly talk about it. I could bear witness because I'm a recovering heroin addict. I got addicted to heroin when I was in college, you know, during the late 60s when I first went to school. I think Helen sensed that I knew that entire world. As a matter of fact, I was living in New York from the late 60s until the early 70s, and I was in New York when Lee was there. But I wasn't really interested in jazz. I was interested in dope. Unfortunately, but I think she sensed that, and she kind of figured that I knew that entire world. But one of the things that she talked about is the fact that they were aware. She said some of the most highly intelligent people she's ever met were heroin addicts, and they would sit around and discuss things that she was fascinated by. And she said that one of the things they said was that it was not an accident that the heroin was situated in Harlem. I mean, people were coming to Harlem buying these drugs, and it was. And later on, I found out the whole thing had to do with COINTELPRO. I don't know if your listeners are familiar with COINTELPRO, but COINTELPRO was a part of the government's effort to stifle the Black Consciousness Movement, and it did, because people were, in other words, there was no accident that if you wanted to buy some drugs, you went to 116th Street and 8th Avenue, which is in the smack dab middle of Harlem. That was a quote-unquote plot, I guess, you know. But it's interesting now, I guess this is a sidebar, that now most of the junkies are now in Vermont and New Hampshire and places like that. So it's like a boomerang effect. But, yeah, there's no question about it. It couldn't be an accident at all. I don't know if it was. One of the things she told me was that Art Blakey was the one who turned all these musicians on. I mean, it was common knowledge that Art Blakey was a heroin addict. Art Blakey would try to turn most of the guys who was in his band on, but some of them resisted, like cats like Wayne Shorter and Benny Colson. She couldn't stand Art. Helen hated Art. And I said, why? She said, well, because Art was the one who turned Lee on to heroin. And Lee said, well, how long does the high last? This is what Helen said. And she said that Art said forever. So that's
well,
that's
you know,
in the book.
What's also interesting is that I had a close relationship before, in his later years, with Philly Joe Jones,
right,
who used heroin with Billie Holiday.
Yes.
And Philly always told me, stay away from that. But his son,
right,
Chris Jones, was addicted. Okay.
Yes.
And
yes.
Then you mentioned another drummer, Art Taylor, and Art Taylor wrote the book, was it Notes and Tones?
Yeah, it's an excellent book. Yeah, I like that book. Yeah.
And I think I met Art in New York. I think I probably bought the book either from him or certainly right around that time. That would have been in the late 60s, 69, 70s.
Yes.
Or I could have met him a little later in 80 because I left New York and I went back in 82. So, yeah, the drug culture I mean, it caught up a lot of the singers, too, because Gloria Lynn was addicted. Of course, Billie Holiday. I don't think that Carmen, Ella, and Sarah, and Betty, I don't think that they were addicted. But I know, you know, I know that it was really a downer for a lot of people.
Oh, it was bad. It was horrible during the late 60s to be in Harlem. It was pitiful.
Yeah.
It was like Harlem looked like bombed out Berlin. It was pitiful. You know, and it was strategic, you know, and when you start researching it and sit back and analyze it and look at the data, you see that it was strategically placed in the African American communities to destroy the Black Consciousness Movement, to destroy very creative people, you know, and they but Black don't crack. You know, they can't get rid of us. We don't crack. You know, we've gone through, we survived the Middle Passage. We can survive Trump. I know we can survive Trump. it's unfortunate, but it's just one of those things, you know. Not all of them were on this. Some of them were, I was able to shake it, you know. So you can shake it, you know, just make your mind up that you're not going to be captured by this beast. So that's what it is.
And
then it's a trick.
There was crack, you know.
Yes.
And so many others. Like, I was in Philly for 6 years, and I knew some really monstrous musicians who were strung out on crack at the beginning.
Yeah.
And I just feel so fortunate that I didn't get trapped in that.
Right.
You know?
It's a trick, I
would like to ask your opinion, or you don't have to talk about it here, but when we're off the air, I'd like to get your opinion about my book, because I haven't been able to get a lot of people to read it.
It's excellent. I love it. You think just like I do. You know, your sentiments are my sentiments exactly. I haven't completed it, but I think I've gone about 3/4 of the way through it. It's excellent. I love it. Yeah.
Well,
I love the art and everything.
I got a bite from one of the school districts that is interested in purchasing it for the high school students because it's very important for people to understand that jazz and blues is the voice of Africans in America, and that their intellectual property was stolen, misappropriated.
Of course, that's
mispackaged,
right.
Mis-commercialized, just
stolen,
you know, and taken away from our community.
It's Black people crying out for help. That's what it is. It's the most political music in the world. It's the most sophisticated music in the world, created by the most sophisticated people in the world, African Americans. Africans. We're the most sophisticated people in the world. We just have to convince other folks that we're sophisticated, you know. So I think it's an excellent book. I would like to see it used at least as a supplement in a jazz educational history course. It should be. It's an excellent book. But they don't want to hear that.
We have 1 minute left. I think that you and I should continue to talk. Okay? Okay?
Say that again. Can we do what?
I think we should continue to talk.
Okay. No problem.
Okay? So this show is coming to an end. I appreciate your time. And I look forward to meeting you face to face one day.
Oh, no question about it. Me too. You've really helped me along by posting it, first of all, on your, what is it, FYI site?
Yeah, Words We Speak, my blog, Words We Speak. Yeah.
Oh, I use it. Yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you for having me on your program. I've enjoyed it.
Okay. And we're going to talk about the wives of musicians next, okay?
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye now. I enjoyed it. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Music Woman Live with your host, Dr. Diva J.C., supported by Women in Jazz South Florida, www.wijsf.org.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.